Ryan Stanton here with ASAP Frontline, joined today by a return guest. This may be the second visit in 21. It was at least sometime late 2020, but 21, I'll have to look back. But Dr. Christina Shinvi, a wonderful emergency physician who brings us all kinds of great content, and this is, in the words of Ken Milne with Yes Jim, a hot off the press kind of article, the qualitative study of resident physician and healthcare worker experiences of verbal and physical abuse in the emergency department, released in the Annals of Emergency Physicians on June 22nd, and something that strikes home for me, and we'll get into that here in just a little bit. Happy to have Dr. Shinvi back with us today. So, Dr. Shinvi, give us a little background and say hello to everybody again.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be back on the podcast. This is a topic that is so important and very near and dear to my heart. And I want to first give a shout out to the first author, Lauren Quarin, and then also Gary Beck-Dallahan, who were the co-authors on this paper. What we were interested in is not just what are the statistics of how many times do physicians or nurses experience abuse or threats or things like that, but really what are the stories? What are the stories that happen and how does it affect them? What is the emotional toll that it has on them? There's prior research that's been done that showed that workplace violence in the ED is very common. In fact, 75% of all workplace assaults occur in a healthcare setting. The number one setting in terms of healthcare are mental health units, but then the emergency department is a second. We are in second place in terms of the most frequent experiences of verbal or physical abuse or harassment. And prior studies have shown up to 97% of emergency resident physicians, so only 1 to 3 or 4 years of training, had already experienced verbal harassment in the workplace by patients or patient families. Other studies have had more sample size or multi-institutional and have already defined the statistics for us. We already know that among ED healthcare workers, about 78% report violent assault within the prior 12 months. And verbal abuse is even more common. And we know that nurses' aides, technicians, and nurses are at higher risk of assault than physicians. They just tend to have more interaction, more face-to-face time. They have to get closer to the patients, doing IVs, cleaning them, turning them, et cetera, et cetera. And we also know that unfortunately, the majority of violent incidents go unreported by staff. So what we were interested in is what is the type of abuse that's occurring? So we did a qualitative study in which we surveyed physicians, residents, staff, nurses, and asked them to report not just how many times in the last year they had experienced verbal or physical assault or abuse, but what was the experience of it? And what emotional toll or what impact did it have on them? And that's where this became really interesting and also pretty disturbing and chilling at times.
Yeah, it just kind of, the whole thing kind of sends me back to my first job out of residency. And of course, we've all were threatened, especially when I was a resident, we still had a lot of very much that peak or growing into the peak of the opioid epidemic, and of course a lot of threats there. And we actually had a physician here in Kentucky that was murdered by one of his patients when he refused to give him pain medications. And but I was working at an inner city emergency department here and had somebody who was under the influence of probably multiple substances and walked up and was talking with the patient, doing a basic examination, listening to the lungs, that sort of thing. And all of a sudden, the patient became quite agitated and just reared back and just belted me across the face. And then before I could even get back, kicked me in the chest. And it was one of those things that, you know, other than the handprint on my face, you know, I'd never really thought about that aspect as a physician, that, you know, you're going to get kicked and belted by somebody you're actually trying to help. And, you know, interestingly, that same person ended up assaulting one of the nurses, and the nurses was injured enough to not be able to come back to work. And actually, I believe transitioned out of emergency medicine at that point. And, you know, the number of times, you know, the fact that we lived on the premise that we had police in the emergency department, in security as well, but police, in order to that it was so frequent, these episodes of threats and violence. And, you know, the person who stood, you know, 4 inches from my face and threatened to come find me and kill me and my family and those types of things, with thankfully a police officer standing just right outside the door ready to jump in if he decided to go ahead and start acting on things. But you know, it's a story that resonates among healthcare in general. I mean, there's nothing unique by any stretch of the imagination in my stories, or even the stories within the article, but it is more of a litmus test of really the environment in which many of us work, and many of the public don't actually understand and see as something. They assume the hospital and the emergency department as a, you know, other than being chaotic with episodes like we see on TV, but other than that, a very professional and an organized environment, but that's not always the case. Kind of roll into some of those, what you kind of pulled from this, from these stories with the residents and attendings and staff through the article that you guys released.
Yes, and Ryan, the story that you told highlights several of the themes that we found, including the sense of resignation that, oh yeah, of course I've been assaulted. Of course this is part of the job. And that in and of itself to me highlights how much we have just accepted it. Whereas in other fields, imagine, for example, you were a judge or a lawyer, and all of a sudden people just came up and swung at you or spat at you or threw feces at you. They would never just say, oh yeah, it's part of the job. That would be a major incident. So the fact that we are so resigned and so just used to it is very telling. And it's something that I don't think the public appreciate that it happens, and that we don't really necessarily learn about in medical school or get warned about. But what we did in this study is we did a qualitative analysis. And not to get too into the nitty-gritty, but we looked at all of the responses and we categorized them with different tags. For example, does this narrative fall into an assault or threat? Does it fall into feeling unsafe? Does it fall into that sense of resignation or influence on care? And we had three independent authors who reviewed it, and then we came together and created a sense of the themes that were arising. So the main themes that came up were, first, the assault or threats. So there were stories about people being verbally or physically assaulted. So for example, a couple that I want to highlight that we included in the article, these are direct quotes. A patient reached around and punched me, giving me a bruised nose and a black eye. A patient threw a ceiling tile at me. I was told by a patient that his groin hurts during a GU, a genitourinary examination. I was told that his pain would go away if I stroked the shaft of his penis. I was sexually assaulted by a patient at work. I filed a police report and faced the patient in court. He pled guilty and essentially got a slap on the wrist. I still see him frequently in the emergency department, and he continues to be sexually, physically, and verbally inappropriate and aggressive with other staff members. This one's very scary to me. I was told by a patient I was discharging that he would come find me and shoot me in the kneecaps. Those kinds of things to me, particularly when there's threats made to what they will do to you at home, or we've had other physicians who have been threatened, their children have been threatened, the patient threatened to rape this physician's kindergarten age daughter. The things that happen, the threats that occur not just to you in the emergency department, but people saying that they will harm you or harm your family outside of the ED, where we don't have police readily available, are particularly frightening to me. Another one actually that we didn't publish because of some strong language or also space restraints, but was one of the responses was, I was assisting cleaning up a patient. He purposefully placed his feces on me and then asked, quote, baby, don't you like having my shit on you? Lick it, baby. So these are just the kinds of things that I don't think are recognized by the public that occur in a healthcare setting. That was the theme of threats and assaults, and that was the most common.
I feel like these stories kind of play out, you know, in EDs, and a lot of the settings can be very different. And then I think a lot of times the response of the hospitals, many times we've actually seen a number of articles, we've commented before on the kind of the patient satisfaction of, we don't actually prosecute, we're not going to do anything to these patients that would make them upset or be a bad image for the hospital or whatever it is. Just kind of accept it. Just, you know, it's almost kind of the victim mentality of saying, just it's part of your job, put up with it. It's okay. And then everybody acts surprised when something really bad happens and somebody gets injured or killed. But a lot of this rolls into the idea of, do you feel like your hospital, your workplace is actually safe? And I think all of us deserve the right to have a as safe as possible, relatively safe workplace. We're already dealing with potential exposures to infectious diseases, injuries, needle sticks, whatever it may be. But then also, you know, that potential exposures that aren't necessarily part of the healthcare process, being violence and threats and you know, physical abuse, exposure to biologic materials. I mean, I think almost everybody has a story involving the flinging of poo, and you know, unfortunately, that's something that seems to be something that people do. That points around the country. So what are your thoughts on this whole idea of the thought that an emergency department is a safe or unsafe working environment?
Well, Ryan, fortunately, I feel like most of the time it is safe. And we're fortunate where I work that we have panic buttons under the desk. So we can press that button and we will very quickly have 3 or 4 security guards who will come and help us. But because of the experiences of verbal threats or actual physical assault, people do feel unsafe. And that was the second theme that arose, with people saying things like, I was punched in the eye by a psych patient. I did not file a police report. And in this case, they said the officer made me feel like I contributed to the incident. I missed 3 days of work. Now I always feel unsafe in my job. So even though we have a lot of support in the moment and in the ED, there are still psychological and emotional sequelae from this, and people continue having to go back to work feeling unsafe. Another resident said, a patient became upset related to narcotics and threatened to kill staff. He was escorted out, but only to the hospital front door. He was waiting in the ambulance bay when I got off work at 2 a.m., and I had to quickly get back inside and call hospital police. So when we're working, there are certain things that we can control in that environment. We can call for help, we can get support there, but then once the patient has left the emergency department or left the hospital premises, there isn't as much support and ways to get help if we need it, other than, of course, calling the county or city police.
And that's a huge issue too, because I've actually seen that. I've actually seen patients get kicked out of the emergency department, then walk around the hospital down to the first floor. That's the only time I've ever seen a C-suite in the basement. And they immediately went in and filed a complaint that the way they were treated. It kind of reminds me of the time that the hospital wanted me to write a letter apologizing to somebody because I told them they shouldn't use cocaine. And they felt like I hurt their feelings, but the hospital legitimately wanted me to write a letter, and that was, you know, and I was blessed at the facility where I was, and actually I've had the police officer that was assigned to us, very good gentleman, since retired, we're still friends. He actually just kind of took everybody under his wings and felt like that, you know, everybody in the ED staff that he was there to make sure that it was as safe as possible, understanding the patient populations that we were dealing with, and was just, honestly, the number of times I felt like he bailed us out. And in fact, I actually did have one patient that did have, even though I didn't have to file the charges because of a witnessed assault by the police officer, did have a restraining order that was placed. And it was kind of funny, because if that person called the ambulance, then they would immediately say they couldn't go to the certain facility because they couldn't be within so many hundreds of feet of me. And so it was amazing that they seemed like they couldn't remember anything but the fact they couldn't be close to me, which was nice. But of course, that's not always the case and we've seen it across the board, and we'll talk about a little bit more with regard to COVID, but with domestic violence and things like that, restraining orders are just invisible lines in the sand that really don't mean anything if somebody actually has intent. And what we're seeing, and now that we're kind of hopefully on the back end of COVID, though the Delta variant may decide to change that narrative, is the fact that during COVID, we've seen, actually my wife sent me an article yesterday talking about the increased incidence of dog bites during COVID, presenting to the hospital, injuries to children especially. And we know there's increased incidence and explosion in domestic violence at home. Substance abuse and those nature, and that nature. Are we seeing that similar transition, that similar pattern in the emergency department? And where are we with the fact that it just seems like we're getting into more of a agitated and potentially violent pattern here in the country?
Well, Ryan, I haven't seen anything specifically on the increase or change in ED violence related to COVID. I think it's complicated because with COVID came a lot more isolation. Patients were more often in closed rooms, or there were panels put up in front of the staff workstations, which also is another layer of safety. So I don't know statistically if there's been an increase in workplace violence in the last year and a half. We also saw a significant drop just in ED numbers in the initial stages of COVID in many areas that are now starting to bounce back. But I think a lot of the general reasons why people think the ED experiences so much violence certainly could be exacerbated. You know, people who come in, they tend to feel they're under a lot of stress. Maybe they're in pain. Often they're under the influence of various substances or alcohol. They may be involved in gang or domestic disputes or violence. Sometimes they're brought in by law enforcement if they're too agitated to be managed by law enforcement and they need medication, or they're experiencing acute psychosis. And of course, with the stress of COVID, and as you mentioned, increasing rates of domestic violence and disputes, that certainly could put a lot more stress on people and cause them to act out or react more violently.
Where do you think this article, this study, and as you mentioned, and I think it's really important to understand this is more of the qualitative rather than the quantitative, because as in the intro, you mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of studies out there looking at the quantitative numbers, but just actually putting not necessarily a face, but stories and actual experiences to what we already know is there. How do you think this adds to the narrative of ED and healthcare violence, and where do we go from here?
Well, Ryan, I think, as you said, this gives kind of the stories behind the statistics. You know, one story is a tragedy, a million stories is a statistics, if I can borrow that phrase. Some of the things people said are, for example, the emotional toll that the experience of abuse or even the threats place on people. Some people mentioned that they had dreams about the events for weeks, or that they were afraid whenever they came into work. So there were repercussions and also influences on care. If a patient has made some sort of violent or physical or verbal threat, then we may feel more nervous or unsafe going into that patient's room. So it can influence the care. And that was the final theme, is that people felt that the experience of abuse or threats did influence care. So it's important to understand both the impact on the individual, because if physicians or nurses or techs or staff are frequently feeling unsafe, that can lead to more burnout. That can lead to, as you mentioned in your story with that nurse, that can lead them to leave jobs or leave this career or leave emergency medicine. And we know that there is a personal, a institutional, and a financial toll that takes. And then the final piece is the financial toll. There are days of work that are lost. There are legal fees whenever it does go to trial, or there's the cost of hiring a new nurse or a new physician if somebody leaves because of that event. And the way to kind of move forward, I think, has to be multi-pronged and multidisciplinary, with involvement at all levels of the hospital and really beyond the hospital. One of the things that came out in this article and others is that even when people experience physical assault, most people did not discuss it, did not file a report. In fact, only 5% in our study of all the ED workers who experienced a physical assault, so not just verbal assault, but physical assault, only 5% filed a police report. And 15% filed a formal hospital incidents report. But most of the time, 53% of the time, they just discussed it with a colleague. And 19% of the time, they didn't even talk about it with anyone. So in terms of how we can help move the needle and change on this, I think we need to have workplace safety implementations. So having police available, having training for your staff about how can we help ourselves be safe. But then that's clearly not sufficient. We also need a reporting method, a way to report both verbal and physical assault to get a sense of how often is this occurring. And then there needs to be repercussions. If someone files a report, there needs to be follow-up, both for that person personally to have psychological support or emotional support or checking in to see how they're doing, but then also maybe an escort to their car if they need that. I know one of my colleagues, when he used to work in LA, he had received a threat from a very plausible threat from a patient that the patient was going to shoot him. And for a long time after that, he wore a bulletproof vest under his scrubs and white coat. And that, you know, that's a very concerning story to me. So we need to have personal follow-up to provide support for the individual, and then systematic follow-up to provide safety in terms of escorts to a car when needed. And then also beyond that, at the legislative level, we need to have stricter guidelines in terms of what this means. So actually in North Carolina, which is where this study was conducted, along with several other states, this state has made assault on a hospital personnel a felony offense. So there are greater ramifications or repercussions when the assault does occur. So I think we have to go from the personal level, the ED level, the hospital systems level with the reporting and intervention methods, all the way out to the legislative level.
I was actually sitting here trying to, you know, find the article because there's actually been some decent, because as you talked about, suffering of care, potentially the disruption in the care continuum and quality care. And there's that study that came out. I can't exactly remember when it was. It was within the last couple of or a few years, showing that that antagonistic interactions within the emergency department or within the healthcare setting do compromise quality of care, because we do very much go into that defensive, very primitive, brainstemish fight or flight response rather than what is necessary for good quality healthcare, which is using that the larger aspect of the brain that can do complex thoughts and putting pieces together and trying to pull the whole puzzle into one piece. With that, how do we, as a healthcare system, start to stem the tide?
So you're absolutely right. If we feel afraid, we are not able to do the same complex problem solving. And I one other just more simple and straightforward aspect of how it impacts care. I remember a patient I had who I stood very much at the foot of the bed, 2 feet away, and with the door right there where I could make a ready escape and other things you can do. You know, I took off my ID badge that has that cord that could easily be used to strangulate me. So I didn't have any things that could be potentially weaponized on me. And I stood there and he told me how he wants to kill people. I asked anyone in specific, everyone, you know, including myself. And so I could not do, for example, a physical exam on that patient because he was actively wanting to kill me. And so even just things like that, where that limits my ability to do the usual history and physical if I can't get close to him because of personal safety reasons.
So with all of these wonderful and uplifting experiences that are happening in the emergency department, how do we move forward from here as a healthcare system? I mean, we clearly know we've taken off the Band-Aid. We know that the wound is there and is festering. How do we address it? Or are we just going to put another bandage on top of it?
Well, I think, Ryan, we do need a multidisciplinary, multi-pronged approach, including all the things that I mentioned. And we also need to change our mindset about this and maybe change our resignation. Whenever we feel resigned that, hey, this is just part of the job, that mindset is learned helplessness, where we feel like we just can't do anything about it. And that limits our creativity. There's tons of psychological studies about learned helplessness. So I think the first thing is, in our own minds, we need to stop accepting that this is part of the job. And then we need to come up with creative solutions. There have been studies about things that you can do, ways that you can change legislature, or ways that you can change hospital policy, or having guidelines for patients that say, this is what we expect of you. We expect you not to be verbally or to physically assault our staff. And then having a real system to report so that we know how often it's happening. You can't modify something if you don't even know when and where it's happening. So having a real system for reporting and capturing that data, and a real response, meaning that it will actually change what's happening. And I certainly don't have all the answers, but we have so many intelligent, incredibly passionate and talented researchers out there that I think we can find prototypes that have already been tried, and then disseminate them, trial them elsewhere, see what works, and then create some best practices or standards or even policies or maybe an ACEP guideline of, here's how hospitals should be addressing workplace violence. Or here's, you know, workplace violence will vary from hospital to hospital just based on the demographics and other factors. But here's what's, you know, the average, or here's what can be done to move the needle a little bit. So finding those things that are already going on and have been successful, and then studying new things and being creative. I think we need representation from nursing staff, from our other staff, from physician staff, from all the levels of the hospital to really, and security, to really understand what we can do both nationally at the hospital level and then individually in our emergency departments.
And interestingly, this is, as I was perusing for that article, I noticed that, of course, understanding this is not a United States specific issue. 2018 study came out talking about agitation and violence among emergency departments in Germany. And, you know, this is something that we're going to, that is seen around the world. And maybe, you know, that'd be an interesting discussion to see the rates and characteristics of those in other countries, because just the simple differences in the way acute care episodes are conducted around the world. And that's actually something that discussing and talking with international conferences, it's very interesting to get a viewpoint of the United States healthcare system and emergency medicine from those outside of the system. And it would be very interesting to see kind of how much similarities we have in terms of these human behaviors and interactions and violence and threats within the emergency department. How can folks get more information with you? Want to dig a little bit deeper with regard to this article or whatever?
Absolutely. We have so much to learn from other countries, and we can learn from places that are doing really well, but also places that are having more struggles with this, because that allows you to identify what are the factors that make it worse in this area or better in another area. So you can find this article. It's on the Annals of Emergency Medicine publication online, and you can reach out to me on Twitter. My handle is @CLShenvey. I would love to hear responses, ideas, stories, anything that you would like to share. Thanks, Ryan.
And it looks like that story I was looking for, the article was 2019 publication on the negative behaviors, agitation, antagonistic relationships, and how that has regard with patient outcomes. So hopefully that's the one I was thinking of, but I didn't have the opportunity to completely read it through while I'm sitting here. But it's one of those things that clearly there's much more than a pattern. It's just, unfortunately, has become an accepted aspect of emergency medicine in the healthcare culture, which definitely needs to change. And even more importantly, when you're looking at efforts towards diversity and inclusion, with the disproportionate impact on female healthcare workers being more likely to be the victims of assault, and especially with sexual abuse and assault, as you talked about with the story earlier. And I've seen that very, very much in my experience in healthcare. And it's one of the only times you're going to see me lose it is when somebody tries to assault either sexually, physically, one of our female healthcare workers. And you know, it's one of those things that we have to all come together and understand that it's not okay for people to be threatened, whether verbally, physically, sexually, within the workplace, and especially in medicine, in emergency medicine. And that should not be accepted behaviors. Our hospitals shouldn't accept it. Our departments shouldn't accept it. And we need to have, like the legislation you talked about, and Kentucky has a similar legislation that they kept it as a misdemeanor, but took it, but raised it to the level of a domestic assault, where it doesn't have to be witnessed by a healthcare worker. I mean, by a peace officer. And you know, that's going to be key. That we're going to have to take this seriously. We're going to take the steps to move healthcare in the right direction to protect everybody involved. As we're seeing right now, as our volumes increase, in fact, 2 days ago, we had the second busiest day in the history of my emergency department as these numbers come back after COVID. And we have shortages of nurses and techs and workers throughout the system. We're going to have to do everything we can to protect everybody in their workplace who's coming in, to make sure that we can sustain and stabilize and improve not only the availability, but satisfaction and fulfillment of the professionals that we have to provide care with. This is a team effort. It isn't just about the physicians or nurses, APPs, techs. It's about everybody within the system. And we're going to have to take those steps to continually move that ball forward to state that this is healthcare, and we expect proper behaviors, and we will not tolerate any threats or violence against those that are there to try to help others. As for me, you can contact me at rstanton@asep.org, rstanton@asep.org, at Everyday Med on Twitter. I also invite you to subscribe to the podcast, whatever platform you like. And until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASEP Frontline.